Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. And of course, our producer, Miss Katie Galley. Lee, this is going to be a fantastic show, man.
I'm excited. We got a bunch of people here that seem to know something about social media because there's things happening everywhere I turn. Someone's got a phone pointing in a weird angle.
Right. Well, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, Miss Deetra Giles. She is Chief Bridge Architect with ExecuPrep. How are you?
I am doing well this afternoon. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, Deetra, can you share a little bit about what you're up to with ExecuPrep? How are you serving folks?
I am Deetra U. Giles, as you've already said. I am the Chief Bridge Architect at ExecuPrep, where we help our clients build and cross their bridge from I want to be to I am. And we're helping our clients be their better selves in their career and their business.
And then how does that take place?
Oh my gosh, it takes place in a variety of ways. We help them with training, executive coaching, and org development.
So individuals, or you work with companies and their employees, like which side of the equation are you on?
Great question. We do both. So most of the time, companies call us in and they say, we have a problem and you are the fixer.
What's the problem?
We've often been called the Olivia Pope of business.
Oh, wow.
So oftentimes it's them figuring out how they want to get to their next level. They're growing. These organizations are small, maybe started off as a mom and pop corner store, and now they're growing to a franchise or...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they want to know, do we have the leadership capabilities? Are our people well-trained? Can they take us to this next level in business? And we are the answer to that question. And our answer is yes.
So now what's an example of some, like a mom and pop that you helped go to the next level?
Wonderful. We're working with, right now we're working with a company that's a logistics company. They do medical transport. And they are going from, let's say, 200 people to 650 people.
Wow, big change, right?
Yes, expanding out of the state and going across state lines, getting like contracts in four or five states now.
So now, okay, so they have this growth. They go, you know what? We're having some problems. We better call the ExecuPrep team. What does that kind of first conversation look like? How do you get the kind of the lay of the land to know how you can serve them and help them?
So that first conversation is, oh my gosh, we're freaking out. We have no clue what we're about to do.
Are they really? Like, so they're panicked?
Yes. You'll be amazed at how many successful business owners really freak out at the idea of more success.
Because isn't that why they're doing it?
Yeah, you think so. But everyone realizes, you know, I'm comfortable where I am. And
right.
Then you have this prospect of doing better. And you're like, oh, my gosh, can I do this? So we're that professional ambient that helps them sleep at night. And we say, yes, you can. And we'll help you. And so they engage us. And we do an assessment. We want to assess their people. Can your people take you to where you're going? If they can't, here's how we fill the gap.
And you help them kind of identify who the top performers they have already on board. There might be people there that can help them that they may not have even known about.
Exactly. That's our hope. Our hope is that they have the capacity within the organization. Mm-hmm. And we call those people our hypos. They're high performer, high potential employees.
Uh-huh.
And so we want to know who are your hypos and how do we get them to what you need them to be without you bringing in people. Because it's actually cheaper to give people raises internally than it is to bring in talent from outside.
A stranger from outside,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, because people outside charge way more money. Someone inside is like, $10,000 more?
I'm in,
me.
Right? They're high-fiving.
Right? Someone outside is like, I don't think so.
That's not worth it.
Now, do you find that when you're in these organizations, one of your early charges is to help them identify patterns that need to be disrupted or, I don't know, habits that need to be broken?
Oh, absolutely. So the first thing we want to do is their mission, their vision, and their values. Oftentimes, these mom and pops have run the organization as if it's a family. And you can't fire your son, but you can fire a poor performing employee. And so we have to make them have a mental shift that this is not necessarily a family. This is a business.
And is that common that a lot of businesses think, oh, I want to run this like a family? And then in reality... Like you said, it's hard to fire your kid, and your kid may not be the best performing person, and that's different. A business is different than a family.
It's very difficult. I've even had instances where I was the bad guy and said, you know what? You have to fire your mom. Like, your eyes got big. You can't see his eyes, but they got really big. And I have had
And they're
to
like,
the
you're
person.
Gonna have to fire my mom. Let's reframe that.
I would say that's above my pay grade. But, you know, for example, mom has been doing the books since the business started.
Right.
And now you're dealing, you have a government contract and you're dealing with U.S. funds and they have a very different standard. And so mom is really not capable of handling multi-million dollar contracts
right.
anymore. And so mom can't be your accountant.
Someone's got to tell her. So you've had that happen?
I have had to tell people, fire your mom.
So if you're going that granular, do you ever find yourself really going all the way back to business model and just revisiting the business model itself? Maybe it needs to be scrapped. Maybe it needs to be tweaked.
Yes. So that's the org development piece. A lot of these people are growing and they plan to, it's almost like looking at a person that is a size 2, but they have 300 pounds of weight on them. So they're trying to put this large organization on this small structure. And so I get granular because that's a part of it. I have to actually look at what is the org structure and what do you need in these positions? You need a CFO now, right? And mom can't be the CFO, the bookkeeper, the accountant. And that's why we end up getting granular, because we're looking at the complete organizational structure of everything they have. Can you grow with this structure? You now need a bodybuilder structure. You can't do the Twiggy supermodel structure anymore.
So now how did you get into this HR lane?
Crazy. I actually went to college thinking I was going to be a neurosurgeon.
And how'd that go?
It went horrible. all the way down to being escorted out of a lab one day because there were frogs and I was petrified of frogs. And I mean, like, police escort. And they said, find something else to do. And I realized I liked fixing things. And what did I like fixing the most? I love numbers. I love business. And so I switched around and I ended up in what they call human resources, and really began, before I started the company, I was director in HR at Emory University, and realized I can do this on my own. And really branched out, did some work with Goldman Sachs and taught in their programs and helped them develop curriculum. And I ended up here at ExecuPrep.
And then so at some point you decided to go out on your own?
I did. I decided, what I tell people is there are square pegs and there are round holes. And there's nothing wrong with either. But if you are a square peg, you have to find a square peg situation. And I realized I was a square peg making the round holes miserable. And it was my time to find my own square peg situation. And that's how ExecuPrep happened. I was making my own square peg situation.
And then what was the difference from a mindset of an entrepreneur as opposed to an employee?
Oh my gosh, that question is the precipitous for a book that I'm writing now called Breaking Good Habits. I realized that what makes a lot of entrepreneurs fail and unsuccessful is they're taking good habits that worked somewhere else, but they make horrible habits for that next level. And so my biggest obstacles were the good habits that I had as an employee.
Like, what's some examples?
Oh my gosh. So one great example that really set it off for me was budgets. So in the corporate world, it's a good habit to bust the budget, because that's how you prove you need money. If they give you $1 million, you spend $1,000,001 and next year you'll get $1.2 million. I got in my own business and thought, I'm going to blow the budget.
Where's that credit card? Right? Let me get that credit card.
Because I budgeted my money and I'm spending it all. And I was like, wait a minute, somebody forgot to load my budget.
Right.
Great employee habit, great leader habit, great career habit, horrible entrepreneur habit. And so when I began to identify those things that were wrecking me, they were good habits that worked in my career, horrible for an entrepreneur.
What a marvelous concept. What a great book title.
I know.
Fantastic. Are you out speaking on these topics now?
I'm starting to. Actually, I'm going to be doing a talk in Portland, Oregon in February around this concept of breaking good habits.
I
right?
love it.
Because it started to transition not just in business. I started noticing I do volunteer work, and I noticed that people who were the high recidivism rate for criminals that are getting out of prison, well, they're coming out with these good habits that kept them alive on the street. And how do you tell me not to do something that kept me alive? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, that was a good habit. Who says, okay, that's a good habit that you have to break. Right.
Right.
And so it's really started even in divorce rates. We have great single habits, horrible marriage habits. Mm-hmm. And so I began to realize it was more than just about business. It was about life in general.
Right. It transfers.
Right.
Now, for you, when you're out there and you're speaking and you're doing this stuff, is it difficult to have these initial conversations with businesses, or like, or do they have to be almost at a crisis point where before they hire you?
Yes and no. The sad thing is a lot of people come to me when they're in crisis. And oftentimes it's difficult unless there's an infusion of new leadership. New leadership is often like, okay, let's assess everything, see what's going on.
Because there's that. That's the kind of catalyst of change, right?
Absolutely.
Because they're in there as the change agent. So they're open, their mind's open to looking at new things.
Exactly. They're the new person and they have new eyes and fresh eyes. And they think, let's get other people with fresh eyes.
Right.
The people who are already there think, I've even had one person say to me when I came in, you tell me when was the last time you made $40 million? I was like, never. But I can also say I've never crashed a business like you're about to. Right.
Good for you.
When's the last time you lost $40 million?
Right. And so it's often difficult for those who are there. So if a new person's coming in, it's easy. If they're standing leadership, it's more difficult.
Mm-hmm. So then they may not even be open to having a conversation with you.
I've had people that I've had to fire as clients and say, you know what? You're not ready. We're wasting each other's time, money, and you're messing up my brand. So let's wait until you're actually
so
ready.
Having a good fit is critical for you, right?
Absolutely. I've learned as an entrepreneur that some of the money that you leave on the table is better left on the table. It took me a while to learn that because it was, you know, oh, we have to pay bills, but.
Because who you say no to helps define your brand as well.
Absolutely. Because a lot of entrepreneurs are wasting their time on the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're wasting your time on people that can't pay your fee or they're bargaining you down. Oh, it should be $1,000. No, this is a $10,000 service. Either you have it or you don't.
Right. Right. Yeah, you're just not a good fit.
You're just not a good fit.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about your sweet spot. Is there an industry sector, a profile? What do the marketing folks call it? Like a
target
avatar,
market?
Persona, demographic, whatever that word
the
is.
The target market.
Yeah.
So our sweet spot is people who are growing, people who are recognizing we're going from a mom and pop to a larger organization. People who are going from the maybe $500,000 to the $2 million mark. People who are saying we're adding on almost double our staff. They recognize we have to gain weight and we don't have the skeleton to support it.
And then so you can come in and you can help them build that structure that's going to hold that weight.
That's what we do. We are the best. That's we're the best at it. We worked hard for it. And we the thing that I love about how we do what we do is I'm a faculty member. I'm a professor at Mercer University. And so everything we do is founded in theory, but we communicate it in a very practical way. Like when people hear me speak, they would say, I never knew you had that many degrees or you were a professor because you just speak like my auntie who knows what she's talking about. And I say, I am your auntie who knows what she's talking about. She just happens to have 3 degrees. You know, it's founded in theory, but it's very practical application.
Now, part of your work is with mom and pops, but part of your work is also with government.
It is. So we do a lot of government work, working with them to do training, especially at that top leadership level. We help them transition their organizations to wherever they're going. One agency working with, I don't reveal names, but they're doing a call to move their agency to the 21st century. And so we're training their mid and top level leaders on change and conflict, how to really get their people on board with this international transition. Mm-hmm. And we've been working with them for about 2 years on that project to move them to the 21st century. Crazy enough, we've been in the 21st century for 17 years.
So hopefully you get it done before the 22nd century.
We won't talk about that, though. That's the granular details of it. But yes, it's better late than never.
Now, can you talk about the differences of dealing with a government employee as opposed to like an enterprise employee as opposed to an entrepreneur? Because those three, like you said, there's good habits in each one of those. You know, to be have the habits to be successful in the government are a lot different than the habits you need to be successful as an entrepreneur.
Oh, my gosh. And even the government is still so very delineated. So, like, for example, government, I could be working with the Army versus the NSA versus the EPA. And even those organizations have very different ideas of what leadership is and how they should perform. Right. And government, though, what I will tell you is it's interesting because you really everyone isn't motivated towards the same thing. It's great in a corporation because everyone knows, okay, we need to make another $1 million. We need to improve our market share.
Right.
In the government, it's not quite as easy as that to motivate everybody towards this great goal because you hope with the EPA, everybody cares about the environment. But there are people in the EPA that have no clue what they're doing. They know I push paper over here to there.
Right. So I can get promoted. So I can get this next job and be a leader of this department over here or this other organization.
Exactly, because you don't have the tangibles, right?
Right.
In the corporate, it's like, okay, did you improve the bottom line by X amount of dollars promotion? In the government, it's like, well, do people kind of like you? Do you feel good about your work?
Right.
And so he's
a jerk.
Right.
Let's not hire him anymore. Put him over there.
Yeah, but he's a jerk. But let's not fire him. Let's promote him to his level of incompetence and kind of leave him there.
Put him over here. This other guy I don't like's department. It'd be perfect over there.
Right. And they'll write things like, he's getting a promotion. Can I get a recommendation? He is awesome. We could not live without him. So
over there. That's where he should live.
It's finding that finding something tangible to motivate them. But at the end of the day, it's still people who want to do their best, be their best, because no one wakes up in the morning and says, you know what, I want to be incompetent today.
Right.
Right. And so it's just finding it maybe a little bit more difficult, but it's still there.
Mm-hmm. So now for you personally, which group do you like is the most rewarding?
You know what? For me, I love my government clients, but personally, and if you ask people on my team, we all have something different. For me, it's the small business owner because I can see real-time results.
And the impact,
oh
right?
my gosh. What I say this morning, they will literally do this afternoon and they will see the ramifications of that tomorrow.
Right. If they don't move at the speed of government.
Oh,
right?
No. Because everything depends on it.
It's life or death.
It literally is. And we pay our bills. And so it's not just this person over here, oh, the government has an endless amount of money. If we mess it up, it's okay. They're like, no, no, no. My kids are going to college.
Exactly.
On this money.
This makes or break that private school payment.
Right? Like you were going to public school, private school. You know what? Harvard or wherever. Georgia State. I love Georgia State. Hate Georgia State. But, you know, it depends on them doing this. So I love seeing that real-time results. I'm a results-driven person.
So your take on how to cultivate and really, leverage relationships in a business environment, because I understand you've written and spoken quite a bit about this topic, right?
Yes. So relationships are everything. You can, even today, in career, business, if you aren't working your relationships, I tell people that networking is the key to the bottom line of your business. Even my own business, I've grown it simply by my network. We don't do a lot of marketing, promotions. We are mostly word of mouth. I would say 70% of our business is word of mouth. And it's from speaking at conferences, getting those cards, following up. I have over almost 4,000 LinkedIn people, and I reach out to each of them at least twice a year individually. And my people are like, should I do it? No, I'm doing it. Because if they respond and see me on the street, I'm like, I'm talking to you. But right?
Don't you find that especially young people, they think social media networking through that, you know, it's a fine line between networking and not working.
Right.
You know?
And so the thing about networking is we social media has given us this false sense of relationship. We feel like we can have 5 million relationships going up because it's so easy to put all of your followers. I have 5,000 followers and friends. You don't have 5,000 friends. You have 5,000 people who haven't bought a thing from you that liked your posts, right? And so networking is really when you get them off of that platform face-to-face and convince them to get and do something with you. Mm-hmm. And people convince, I was working with a business owner that's an Instagram person. She says, I have 10,000 followers. And I said, you should be able to account for if they're really your followers and they're really loyal to you, that should be at least $100 per person. Do you have that? No, I can't even afford your fee. You're not really networking, right? You're really not converting those people. It's about conversion. And that's when you know you're networking the way you should be.
Now, when you're working with a client, are you actually helping them kind of improve the ROI?
Oh, that's the only reason they pay me. If I can't help you get more than what you pay me, I'm not worth my weight in gold, right? So it's all about the ROI. It's funny because I go to people and they say, you're HR, you're org development. I'm like, yeah, but I love numbers and I want to know about your business. It's not about what I'm going to do. It's about your business. When I understand your business, that's how I improve it. If I'm not improving your bottom line, I'm worthless.
So do you find that a lot of entrepreneurs, they're kind of duck the ROI question, that they don't want to be held accountable?
And
for results.
It's because they don't understand it. A lot of them will not acknowledge, I understand baking cakes. I don't understand business. And so they go into business to bake cakes and never realize I'm not baking cakes. I'm running a business.
Right.
And when you say ROI, and I've even had one person, I finally said, do you know what ROI is? And she said, no. So we've been talking for like 2 weeks and you haven't asked me that's return on investment. oh, well, break that down. And even talking about break even had never assessed how much her product should cost. It just, it sounds like a good number. Well, no. So really having to make them really admit that they don't know, it's hard to do that for a lot of people.
So in the smaller companies, you know what, I'm going to be transparent here. I'm asking for us. So like in our little company, Lee and I, we own the network and we run one of the six studios and we're here interviewing people and we had an instrumental part in booking the people. So we're employees, we're leaders, we're owners. I mean, juggling all those balls, I'll be honest with you, it's a little bit challenging. Are we oddballs? Or are you running into that all the time?
That's everyone, especially when they first start. The hard part about it is knowing and growing when you can. What I find that most entrepreneurs do, they start off, of course, you don't have $1 million to hire all this staff. When they get a little bit of money, they hold on to it so tightly that they don't grow. It's when you can grow, hire an assistant. When you can, hire a business developer. That was the best thing I did. Actually, I'm in the process now of convincing someone to come on and be our CEO.
Oh, really?
And they're like, oh, you want someone to be the CEO of your business? Absolutely, because I do this. And right now I'm running the business, but I'm passionate about doing this. This is what I do when I was built to do. So I want someone to run the business. Let me be the president, but let me go out and do the stuff. Right now, my staff won't let me do the stuff, staff. Because I'm responsible for bringing in business, building business, and I need someone to do that. And so I am excited about giving away that money. And most entrepreneurs are saying, no, I'm going to hold on to every dollar of it. No, I make more money if they grow and I can do.
So it's sometimes they're trapped with this kind of scarcity mentality and they don't have this feeling of abundance that there's so much out there, then we can be helping more people if we kind of open our mind a little bit.
It comes from a very real place, though, because there was a time when they didn't have it. And there was a time when you weren't sure where the next dollar was coming from. And so it's not this mythological made up idea, is that they haven't made the transition. Again, breaking a good habit, because the good habit was holding on to every dollar because we might not get another contract for 3 months.
Right.
And so that was a good habit, but now they're in a different place and they have to break that good habit of holding on to every dollar. You have to put that money out to grow the business.
So now where are you at on the book? Is it completed?
I'm almost finished. So I've had so much pressure to get it done. So I have planned to have it done by January. I want to release it on my birthday, which is January 22nd. I accept all gifts year round. I celebrate all year. So I want to have it done for my birthday, which is January 22nd.
And then is this being self-published or are you traditionally publishing it?
I am up in the air about it right now. I've had some talks and some offers, so I haven't decided just yet.
So you're getting it done first?
Yes, I want to get it done first. And I write my own stuff, which takes time. So I'm actually going on a trip to, it sounds like a great trip to the Bahamas, but I am going to lock myself up in.
Yeah, sure you are.
Yeah, right.
You could have locked yourself in a hotel downtown. That could have been another place.
No, but I have two kids and a husband that will find me if I am in driving distance. So I have to go on an airplane and acquire a passport to truly get away. So the Bahamas is right there. I'm going away to write.
Good stuff. And if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can find me at execuprep.com. That's execuprep.com.
And then they can also connect with you on LinkedIn if they want.
Absolutely. I am Deetra Giles on all social media, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of that. Deetra Giles.
And that's Deetra, D-E-T-H-R-A.
That's correct.
Giles, G-I-L-E-S.
That is awesome. Thank you.
Well, Deetra, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this afternoon. I'm inspired. I'm intrigued. I'm being a little more introspective after that conversation because I think I may have some habits, good and bad, that need to be broken, but we're blessed to have you here. Looking forward to the book coming out. And I have a feeling we're going to speak between now and then anyway, but if we don't, let's definitely get you back in here when you launch that book.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right. Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I would love to.
All right, Lee, you ready for the headliner?
I am.
She's been very patient. She was nodding her head. I think I might even caught her taking a few notes, so she seemed to appreciate what was going on.
Did you learn from all of Dietrich's mistakes?
I did. Not mistakes.
All right. Please join me in welcoming to the show founder and CEO with Vendor Space, Miss Efi Afabi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing well. What was your favorite part about that last segment, aside from the free book that Dietrich's going to send you?
Honestly, just understanding everything. You know, I definitely have been on that side. I understand just the different phases, especially with the businesses. So
you've made all these mistakes. You yeah, screwed basically. All this stuff up. So you identified what you saw. Yeah, us too.
So now, can you talk about Vendor Space? What are you doing for folks?
Yeah, sure. So Vendor Space, we are an event matchmaking platform. We're revolutionizing the way you book events and vendors by simplifying the search process. So essentially, instead of going to Google or Facebook, all the social medias when you're trying to look for your DJ for an event or for entertainment, you would come to Vendor Space and you could do it in like 2 minutes.
Now, are the events that you're serving, are they kind of consumer events like weddings or parties, or are they business like a trade show or a conference?
Yes, we're doing B2B. So they are trade shows, they're conferences, they're festivals, they're fairs. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of these private events that companies put on. So it's more so in that space.
So now how'd you get in this? You've been doing events for a while?
Yeah. For a long while. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's been going on over 10 years now. Mm-hmm. I actually started when I was in college, and I went to Howard University. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I used to do like these really cool big events on campus. And I found that I could make a lot of money doing that instead of mm-hmm. having a job. And so it kind of inspired me to just make it a profession right after graduation and kind of continue that way.
So you help companies that are putting on events, you can help them do a quality event?
I used to.
That's what you used to do before
Vendor
Space?
Yeah, I had an event production company, correct. And what led me here was we used to produce our own events more mm-hmm. so than we did private events. And we planned a really big festival that ended up losing a lot of money. But we learned from our mistakes and we realized that the biggest issue was the vendors. The time it took to source them, you know, when some dropped out, being able to replace them. So figuring out where we could kind of have a resource to find these things when you need them.
So then that was the catalyst to create this. Is exactly. it an app?
Yes, it will be an app. Right now we have a website platform. We're in a private beta. So mm-hmm. we'll be releasing that actually in a few weeks. We're doing our launch event December 5th. But we'll be rolling out the app at the beginning of the year.
Now, is this your baby? Like you're the one yes. who funded this? Is it self-funded or you have venture capital? Like how
no,
is this funded?
We are in the midst of hopeful rounds of funding, but so far it has been bootstrapped. And yes, it is my baby.
So you kind of visualize it, but are you also the technical person who built the code and all that stuff?
No. We have a co-founder. He is also our technical person. So he's building it.
So you have your vision and he's creating the code and yes. to make it responsive on the website and on eventually the app.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, you know, I really appreciate him just understanding and being patient, but he's doing a great job and he understands it and we're building something.
So now it's out in beta right now?
Right now it's not, but it will be in about 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, yes. there'll be. So right now you're trying to find people to populate it right
exactly.
now?
Exactly.
Vendors and events.
We have a wait list right now. So you're able to sign up. You'll be first to try it out. And then when we do our private beta, we do have some events that we're onboarding now. Some, you know, like exclusive events that may interest some people. But
all right, let's play this out a minute. I'm on the site. So how private is this beta? It's pretty private right now. Okay.
No, that's just the landing page. You can get the basic information.
Okay. So we could be on both sides of this thing because we have events for our community, but we also provide a service like at trade shows and conferences. Mm-hmm. So let's walk this through, or tell me if it's not what I'm envisioning. But you know, we do remote broadcasts at conferences, large and small. We do them in small local events. We've been down to, I mean, we've been at Oracle Open World doing remote broadcasts at HIMSS, for several years. So we would put ourselves on this platform somehow, and mm-hmm. and there would be some real estate, an area where we can describe the service and a way for people to, walk us through it.
Okay, sure. So let's take that example. You
right,
are
we're a vendor,
for,
right? So correct. We would be, that would we're be the category, vendors. Be a vendor.
Correct. You're a vendor. You're looking for an event this weekend. You're interested in, for whatever reason, either getting your brand out there, maybe making some more money. So you hop on Vendor Space. You create your profile standard, just like any network. You're able to filter in and type in exactly what you need based on budget, the size of
so
the
like
event.
So like we put
location,
our costs and what
your
kind of
cost,
the specifics of what we do.
you put what you do.
We put a picture of Katie Galley. We don't put a picture of me or you on there. Right. So, I mean, any consultant would put a picture of Katie Galley on there, but then maybe some video and audio of, I mean, literally, sure, we've done hundreds of these remote broadcasts all over the country.
So. And that's the idea, know, being that we're doing it B2B, we do verify each of our users. So we do make sure that you have at least 3 past events for other people. And that kind of, we have radio systems. Okay. So at least you're trusting.
Because you're vetting them.
Exactly. We're vetting them. And we're really
Because this is like kind of like an Uber for events?
Yes. We like to call ourselves a Tinder for event professionals.
Tinder is better than Uber? Is that
See, it's the easiness. It's the simplicity easy. In Tinder. Okay. You know?
Uber, Uber is a vendor space for rides.
Right. Either or, though. They're all the same marketplace idea.
So it's going to be down to where you're swiping left or right?
Well, the app will allow you to do it that easily, but the website...
Really? Yeah. So if I'm looking for... stuff in my booth, and then so they can look and say, okay,
I can hire a magician, or I can explore this idea of having live radio in my booth, or I can,
So then,
and then you say, hey, I want to work with that person,
or at least talk to them. Do they book it, or this just kind of gets them in conversation with us, or
no, they book it through the platform, so you're able to contact and then you book, and it's just like we just made it a little bit easier than the emails back and forth, so it's like instant messaging, you know, you're able to
converse,
and then thereafter, you actually have like a private area, it's a project area where you can continue the conversation. So instead of emails again,
and then I'm paying a fee to be part of Vendor Space, or you get paid when there's a transaction?
Yes, we do transactions, so we are free to use and available to the public when we release. But that's the main thing that we knew that stood out from our competitors. A lot of them do charge a hefty amount, but they don't guarantee you anything. So this way,
you only get paid for results.
We get paid.
Dietra would like this. There's an ROI element to that.
Trust us, you know?
So it's free to participate. And then if there's a transaction, then Vendor Space gets some portion of that.
Correct.
Now, for you right now, what do you need more? More vendors or more events?
Both.
You need more of everything, right?
Both.
I still want to talk about me for a minute. Can we do it? No, look, they have this price. Well, I mean, it is my show. So they have this price bidding element, and they call it a reverse auction. Okay, so we do a lot of remote broadcasts, or we do a fair amount for associations, causes, that kind of thing. So they still need to be related to business. Women in technology. How many of those have we done where we've gone on site with their big powwow and we've done remote broadcasts? So they have this reverse auction thing where women in technology, I don't even know that they necessarily have it in their budget, but I don't want to charge women in technology our standard remote broadcast fee, like we charge the HIMSS healthcare IT. But I need to make money. I got to operate at a profit, right? Right, DJ? So could I go on this thing when this is all up and running and say, hey, on November or whatever, I have this opportunity, and then have people bid to be the sponsor of the remote broadcast at the Women in Technology thing?
Yes, you can. You would be able to do that. And then the way that we call it reverse is that you have the opportunity, you know, some people are looking for the lowest, of course. Their budget isn't that big.
Yeah, so. That won't be us.
And some people
But there are some people that really want to be in front of the Women in Technology crowd.
Exactly, and they just don't know about the opportunity. So that's the idea.
And they would bid, though, right?
And they would be able to bid, yes.
So a staffing recruiting firm A might bid?
Right.
Okay.
Wow.
I'm liking it.
Yay, thank you.
So now, for you, the way you get paid is the more people that are on this, the more transactions that will happen.
Yeah.
And then that's where it's going to work for you.
So yeah, how it's really based off connections.
Right. So it's connections. So how are you getting the word out to get more and more people into the app?
Right now, we're gearing up to do like more aggressive marketing, but so far we've done pitch competitions, you know, speaking engagements, things of that nature, and honestly just going face-to-face people. I can't say everyone, but, you know, just really understand the value of a face-to-face, a meeting, interaction. And as soon as I do that, people immediately, they sign up on the spot, you know, or they connect me with someone else, or they say, hey, I can introduce you to the convention center or something.
So that's who do you need to meet the most of right now? Convention centers, things like that?
Well, right now I'm focusing on events in itself. So the people behind it, the production companies, the planners, venues throw events. So that's where my biggest focus is.
So the more you know of them, the better.
The better. And there's events are, it's really a booming business.
It's happening all over the world.
Exactly. And especially in Atlanta, it's growing going too. So it's
so you're focusing Atlanta right now?
Yeah, the idea is to conquer Atlanta and then take over the world.
And then, if somebody wanted to get on the list, is it vendorspace.xyz?
Yes, vendorspace.xyz.
And that's where the landing page is for them to go on and then to kind of just get an idea of what are the different services and the different way they can participate.
Yes, and you automatically, of course you can choose, but you get signed up for our newsletter and you'll be able to receive a lot more information that way. We like send out upcoming events and opportunities that are coming up even before we release our beta just to kind of engage with our community, so.
All right, this is fantastic. I'm going to learn more about this. I'm going to go in and register. I would register as a vendor for Business Radio X, right? Yes. For the remote broadcast work that that we do. So thank you for that.
No,
now I want to talk to you about your entrepreneurial journey. So back up a little bit here. Walk us through what in the HE double toothpicks were you thinking when you decided to jump off the ledge and do this? And what counsel, if any, do you have to offer other folks out there that, might be at least contemplating taking this kind of plunge?
Starting from the beginning, I think like entrepreneurship has always been in me. I'm the product of two entrepreneurs. Both my parents are. So I've seen like my mom, I've seen her go through the struggle, but also come out and be extremely successful. I've seen my dad, he put us through college, four kids on his own, but he was extremely successful on his own, paying us right through with no loans and whatnot. So starting there, that's where my drive to kind of be that and kind of, be that boss or just be in control of my schedule, but do what I love to do. That's how that started. And then getting into college, I don't know, I've always been that ambitious person. But I guess speaking to other people, I definitely would say, you find what you love doing and honestly just follow it. I know it's hard. There's always ups and downs, but it's definitely worth it. And you can pair it with people like Deidre and, get your business aligned. That's definitely along the way. But I think it's been proven before. I think I've seen success in another company. But just understanding that if you hang on and go through the trenches, like you can definitely be extremely successful.
Now, how about the person that's putting on their own event? You have a lot of experience putting on a lot of successful events.
Yeah.
So what are some tips and tricks to put on an awesome event?
You can start with the don'ts, if that helps. That's always the easiest way to start a list like that for me.
don't do an event without doing your budget first, just like with business. But events are the same way. And just as many, I've had successful events, I've had events that failed. And, it really just starts with your budget and understanding. And it's just like a product. You do all your costs and you'll come out, well, this is the ticket I need to do to make sure I break even or make sure I profit. Don't get too fancy too early, or don't think too big. Definitely work within budget.
All right, enough don'ts. I like the do's. I'm the other side of the glass.
You like being positive.
Exactly. Tell me about how you attract sponsors to your event. What are the things that sponsors want to see and hear in order to get involved and get behind events?
I think we established that remote broadcast, live radio.
They need live radio.
You really should have that at every event, right?
It goes I'm without saying.
So what are some things that when events try to put, like we had a meeting this morning with somebody that's putting on an event and she's trying to get sponsors. What are some things that she can be doing to attract sponsors? Like what do sponsors want to see?
Definitely almost like a resume, put all your data together. I always say if you're able to do one, then you have enough data to be able to present to someone. Mm-hmm. It's just how you put it together. So people there's things, pitch decks or sponsorship decks, really take time in it. It's just as though you send out anything else, really. They look for the person that took time to maybe design it and make sure all the catch points were there, mm-hmm. from the size, all the money, that the opportunities that are there. So definitely be able to get that together. And it's just as aggressive as anything else. You really just have to constantly keep following up with people. And following up is really important. You can send something, and I've done it before, and then just following up, they may not have seen it, but when they do see it, hey, they're interested, and you actually made, you're able to secure your sponsor. So following up is key.
What is your biggest sponsor win that you've ever gotten? The one that you're most proud of. That you had a battle. You went in there. You thought it was a long shot. They were ignoring you, maybe, and then you kept battling.
It wasn't the biggest battle, but I think it would be one I'm most proud of. Definitely when I had the opportunity of working with Live Nation and the Fillmore back in D.C. So this was when they first opened and, you know, just being young and, you know, kind of getting them to trust me to say, hey, I can bring an event here and really pack it out. And it's beneficial for both of us. So that worked out well. And, you know, it started a great relationship going forward. So that was kind of cool.
All right. One more time before we wrap. Coordinates for people who may want to reach out, have a conversation with you or someone on your team. And let's make sure that they get the website address one more time so they can check this out.
Sure. So you can visit us at vendorspace.xyz, and you can follow us on all social media platforms at Vendorspace News.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you, guys.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest today, and of course, our fearless producer, Katie Galley, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.